This audio CD was recorded live at a parent workshop Christine Duvivier gave on April 11th, 2009. If you'd like more information about Christine or you'd like to receive her articles, go to positiveleaders.com. That's positiveleaders.com. One word.
Well, good morning. Can you hear me without the microphone? Good, good. Well, I'm Ned Halliwell, and this is
Christine Duvivier.
And we're going to do sort of a tag team this morning, but we thought we'd start by introducing ourselves together. I'm a psychiatrist, work with children and adults. I have an office in Sudbury and one in Needham. And I live in Arlington with my wife and our three kids, who are 19, 16, and 13. So I'm in the middle of unwrapping their gifts.
Great. And I have a 24-year-old and a 20-year-old, which you'll hear a little bit more about. 3 years ago, I decided to go back to school to study positive psychology. Most people, when I say that, say to me, "Christine, that sounds interesting, but what exactly is it?" Think of it as the study of human flourishing, how to increase positive emotion, how to follow paths to happiness, how to live a satisfying life. Now, probably some of you in this audience are thinking, that sounds a little touchy-feely, a little motherhood and apple pie. Any of you? Come on. There's some in every crowd. Well, I wish you could have been there when I approached my husband, David. I went to him. I said, "Honey, I'd love to go back to school and study happiness." He looked at me. He said, "I think you've been under more stress than I realized." I said, "That's probably true, but really, this is something I'd love to do. This is a phenomenal program. And you know, it's the only place in the country where I can study the scientific evidence of happiness." He looked at me. He said, "How much does happiness cost?" So I told him, and he thought about it for a minute. And he said, "Christine, I know this would mean a lot to you, but couldn't you be happy with a big screen TV?" No, I couldn't. So I did go back to school, and I jumped in with both feet. I guess that's what you do when you go back in midlife. I wanted to understand how we could bring out the highest potential in people. That's what I really wanted to know about. And so as I was studying, I began bringing back into the businesses and the organizations I worked with the methods and the approaches and the ideas that I was learning. And I brought them to individual executives that I coached. And that was great. And one day, something happened out of the blue. It was spring. It was spring of Lauren's senior year. Lauren is my younger daughter. I was driving in the car one day, and I got a phone call. It was Lauren, and this is what I heard. Yeah, that's what I thought too. Oh, Lauren, not again. But I pulled the car over to the side of the road. I said, "Lauren, honey, take a deep breath. I can't understand you. What is the matter, honey?" She said, "Sam's gone! He killed himself!" And all the air was just sucked right out of me. It was like being punched. I knew Sam. They had dated a few years before, their freshman year. He was kind, he was thoughtful. He had a dry sense of humor, would make me laugh. And just a year before this happened, his parents had actually moved across town and now lived around the corner from us. I would see Sam out walking when I was driving around town. I'd always offer him a ride. He'd never want it, but say hi. He was a bright kid. He loved computers. He was interested in how they worked. He was very curious. And he had loads of friends. But Sam was the only senior that year who wasn't going to college. He didn't want to. His parents later told me that he hated school. Now, I don't know exactly why he did what he did, but I do know that a lot of teens are struggling to figure out where they fit, to feel like they can be a success in school and in life. A lot of kids feel stuck. They don't know quite how to unleash their potential, or even if they have any potential. So after I got that heartbreaking phone call from Lauren, I threw out the thesis I was working on. It was going to be working with executives to bring them to their optimal performance. And that just didn't feel meaningful to me at that moment. I muddled around for a while, just not really knowing what would be more meaningful. And finally it dawned on me that if I could look at kids like Sam, if I could look at kids who weren't good students and look at what was best in them, understand what were their strengths and gifts, what did they have for potential, that maybe that could make a bigger difference than just doing this with business executives. And so that's what I did. I went off and I did the research. And along the way, I discovered some things that shocked me, and I'll talk about those this morning. So today, what we want to do is we want to talk about how you can understand your child's potential, how you can help him or her to unleash it. And by the time you walk out of here, you'll have what you need to guide your child, to bring out what's best in him or her. That's what Ned and I are planning for this morning. So let's start out by talking about strengths, gifts, and success. And so I did start out to study. I decided to look at kids that I called the bottom 80%. I now affectionately call them the bottom 80. My daughter, who's one of them, coined that term. And so I set out to look at their gifts and strengths. But as you'll see this morning, I ended up looking at a lot more than that. Here's the list of strengths. And as I talk about these, let me just pause for a minute and say to you that when I'm talking about strengths, I'm really not talking about specific skills or ability, like the ability to play the piano, for example, or to hit a tennis ball. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about as their strengths. I'm actually talking about character strengths. And these are strengths that were developed within the field of positive psychology by Marty Seligman at University of Pennsylvania and Chris Peterson at University of Michigan. So character strengths are a set of 24 strengths they have tested everywhere in the world in every major world religion. These are pretty much universally valued strengths. There's 24 of them. And they're what we think is best in human beings. They fall into the moral domain. Gifts, on the other hand, which I'll be talking about in a minute, are talents and abilities outside the moral domain. That's the way I'm talking about them. And the gifts that I'll be talking about will be the gifts that conflict with school. Okay, so just to make that clear. So look at these top strengths: honesty, fairness, judgment, kindness, citizenship, bravery, love, creativity. What a list, huh? Who wouldn't want those strengths? That's what I found as the top strengths in the bottom 80. Now, this is in my representative sample. This does not mean that every kid in the bottom 80 has these strengths. This does not mean that a child in the top 20 doesn't have one or more of these strengths. Okay, this just happens to be what came out in the representative sample that I did. By the way, I looked at middle school and high school students. Okay. I said I would talk about gifts that conflict with school. So here are seven gifts that I found in these kids that conflict with school. The first one is visioning. So this is thinking in pictures. This is people who see things three-dimensionally in their heads a lot of times. Okay? If you think of the saying that we all know, a picture's worth a thousand words, think of it. A brain that processes in pictures processes at least five times faster than somebody who processes in words. Okay? That conflicts a little bit with reading and writing, as you can imagine. Another gift, exploration. Okay, these are kids that love to explore. Right? They love to investigate things for themselves. And they actively resist being taught by someone else. Okay, I'm seeing some nodding. Some of you know kids like this. Well, Tara was one of these. Tara was a kid who never wanted to take a lesson on anything. It's true. Didn't mean she didn't learn, though. Tara would observe, she'd explore for herself, and when she was ready, she'd do whatever it was. So, for example, Tara never took a tennis lesson in her life. Seventh grade, went out for the competitive tennis team and made the team. That's kids with exploration. Grace is another gift that I found. This is kids that are unruffled in tense situations, often on the athletic field and in social situations. You'll find that kids with grace have it in multiple situations. And what seems to happen with these kids is that their brains are able to just slow things down just a tiny bit, just that extra split second that makes for a phenomenal athlete, a really graceful athlete, also makes for somebody that in a tense situation can just pause for that extra half second and then come out with something that just melts, that just disarms, makes people laugh. That's grace. Manual dexterity is the next one. So these are kids that love to take things apart, put them together, are very agile with their hands. Okay, very good with manipulatives, and they like to learn by touching and feeling and doing. Okay. Next one I call self-clarity. What do I mean by that? What I mean is kids that know themselves so well, they're so clear on who they are, that they resist actively when they're asked to do things that don't fit with them. Okay? They're also not afraid of their own weaknesses. They're not ashamed or embarrassed. They'll tell other people their weaknesses. And they're not afraid of weakness in other people. Okay? They'll often partner. I see some of you know these kids. Okay? They'll often partner with somebody that's got a strength or a gift that they don't have. Oratory was the next one. So any of you familiar with Howard Gardner's work on multiple intelligences? Some of you are? Okay, so he's done us a huge service by telling us that there's more than one way to be intelligent. Okay, and I know some of you are teachers, and I know that some schools and some teachers are trying to work with multiple intelligences, which is fabulous. But one of the things that I found when I looked at these kids was that some of the intelligences were defined so broadly for these kids that they really weren't as helpful. So, for example, a language intelligence is too broad for the bottom 80, because you can have a kid who is gifted at speaking to people and interviewing and talking and whatever, but not good at reading and writing. Different language ability. You can have a kid who's gifted with computer language, but not with English. Okay? Sign language, but not with English. Okay? So there's different language skills. And the gift that I found was kids... Oops, sorry. Yeah, got to be careful about those hands. Was the gift of oratory. Okay. And finally, insight. So these are kids who seem to sense with multiple senses. They seem to go through life like sort of absorbing things from multiple senses. And they just kind of cut through everything and bring out something that gives other people insight into what's going on in the situation. You know, there can be a big discussion going on, and then they'll say the one-liner that makes everyone else go, oh, yeah. Okay, so that's insight. Now, let me ask you something. Have you ever known a child who was really very bright but didn't do well in school? Any of you? I'd imagine there'd be a few in this audience. Okay, I have two. So imagine being a boy who loved to think in pictures, but being told that you're peculiar because you didn't speak until the age of 3. That describes one young boy. Year after year, when the teachers would give him tests, they'd tell him to memorize something and then ask him to write the answers down on a test, he'd be at a loss because the words on the page didn't match the pictures running through his mind. So year after year, he'd get bad grades. What do you think a kid like that would start to say to himself? I'm stupid. I'm a loser. I hate school. Yeah. This boy was a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, and nothing clicked for him. He didn't fit. Now, if you think about the child you were thinking of when I asked you, do you know somebody who's bright but doesn't do well in school? What do you how do you think that it might affect that child when they feel that way? I'll tell you how it affects some kids. What I found is that they adapt to maintain integrity. And Dr. George Valiant has explained to us that coping mechanisms, okay, coping mechanisms, sometimes called defense mechanisms, can actually be a very healthy thing. Okay, because they can protect you, they can help you to heal, even though some of them are less mature than others. Okay. Ideally, what you want to do is gravitate toward the more mature ones. Clearly, with teens, that's true too. So what I saw was that when these kids are asked to do things that conflict with their natural gifts and interests, it can look ugly because they're going to protect their inner core. They may resist. They may rebel. Right? But if you think of a scab, what's a scab do for you?
Protects,
right? A scab allows the skin underneath to heal. It's a healing mechanism, and it is ugly, okay? But it is a good mechanism, okay? That's what can happen with these kids. It's an immature mechanism, but it is protecting them. That's what they're doing, self-protection. And when they fail and feel that they might fail again or fail to meet expectations, they'll do things like not study for a test. Think about it. Would you rather say, I failed the test because I didn't study, or because I'm dumb? I want to just show you a little clip about adapting. Let's see if we can get this. So remember when I told you about the boy who didn't fit a couple minutes ago? Well, he was a disaster in high school. And he couldn't get in the college he wanted to go to. But eventually, he found a school that emphasized visual learning. And finally, everything clicked. He fit. So what do you think could happen for the kids you were thinking about if they could learn in a way that fit them? I'll tell you what happened with this boy. Fast forward a few years, and he starts asking himself questions like, what would it look like if I were riding on the end of a beam of light? Anybody know who I'm talking about?
Einstein.
Who?
Einstein.
Albert Einstein. Yeah. Albert Einstein is the result of a good fit. And look at what he says up here. Words don't seem to play any role in my thinking. Think about that. Words don't play any role in my thinking. And how do we ask most kids to learn?
Words.
Now, I imagine some of you are saying, okay, but Albert Einstein, he's a genius. Are you saying my kid could be a genius? That is exactly what I'm saying. I am saying that it took Albert Einstein to figure out that he was a square peg trying to get into a round hole. But what Ned and I are trying to do is we're trying to help parents facilitate a process where more kids can find the right fit, where more kids can click and bring out what's best in them. So what I'd like to do right now is in your folders, could I borrow yours for just a second? Thank you. You have two green sheets. Things that I'd like you to just think to yourself about for a minute is, now, what are our goals in educating teens? What are our goals in educating our children? Why don't you just think about that for a second? And the ones that I'm going to talk about may not match exactly to what you just thought about, but I bet they'll fit somewhere with some of the things you're thinking about. I'm going to work with three that I hear often from parents and teachers. And that is that our goals are to develop character strengths, to develop productive citizens, and to develop future leaders. All with the idea that we want our kids to have a great life. Is that set of goals okay for you if we work with those for right now? Does that work? Great. Okay, thanks.
How about happiness?
Happiness. So when I said all with the idea that we want our kids to be happy, I said great life. Why don't we use the word happy instead? So all with the idea. Now, you may be saying, look, one of our goals for education should be to have our kids be happy in the process of being educated. But most often right now, the way we've got things structured, what I hear from people is the idea is that if we do these things, they're going to have a life that will make them happy. Does that fit with what you were thinking? It does? And we're going to talk a little bit more about this later on, too. Oh, yeah.
How do you define a leader?
Okay, great question. Thank you. And I promise you I didn't plant him in the audience. Okay. Peter Drucker, anybody know who he is? Who is he?
It's something to do with quality management or something.
Okay, yep. Anybody else know anything about him? Okay, well, he's thought to be, he got into quality management because that's a leadership approach, but basically he's thought to be probably the foremost thinker on leadership in the last century. Okay, so what do you think he says, Peter Drucker says, are the two most important attributes of leaders?
Yes, perseverance.
Perseverance, that's a good answer, but wrong.
Ability to listen.
Great answer. You're wrong. It's just what Peter Drucker says, not what I say. Yeah, go ahead.
Vision.
Wonderful answer. Not what I'm looking for.
Communication.
No, I agree with these answers, but this isn't what he said.
Integrity.
Another great one. Okay. What is it?
Creativity.
Another great one. And we're going to talk more about that one in a minute. I'm going to take one more, and I'm going to put you out of your misery and tell you what he said. Go ahead.
Independence.
Okay, that's close to something that he says. All right, somebody's dying to say one over here. Go ahead.
Confidence.
That would be another fabulous one. I'm going to tell you and stop this guessing game. Okay, what Peter Drucker says, not Christine DeVivier, Peter Drucker says, is they know themselves and they're honest. Now, I hope... Okay. You know what? Okay, good point. You know what? When we talk about... you're right. Integrity is... Yep, good point. Integrity goes with honesty, so let's put it together. I was looking for one word and one word only. Okay. So, in terms of knowing themselves and honesty, I hope that sounds familiar to you. Okay? We saw the gift of self-clarity, knowing themselves, earlier. And we saw honesty on that first list of strengths. How many of you had either self-clarity on the gifts list or honesty as something you noticed in your child? It doesn't matter if it was a top one or not, but was that something? Okay, so a lot of people in this room, by the way, if you're not raising your hand right now, doesn't matter. The great thing about strengths and gifts is there's not a right one and a wrong one. They're all good. Okay, but anyway, so in the bottom 80, we saw that top strengths and gifts included honesty and knowing themselves. And Drucker said that the best leaders are not afraid of weaknesses in others. In fact, they build others, they bring others around them so that they minimize their weaknesses. Okay? And he cites Harry Truman as an example of a really trustworthy leader with integrity. Okay, so let's just talk about the goal of productive citizens for a moment. And Jane Dutton at University of Michigan and her colleagues have studied what makes for the highest performing organizations. Okay, so this is businesses. And what she found is that the best businesses are very, very good at complex coordination. So raise your right hand if you've ever worked in a large organization. Okay. Raise your left hand if you've ever worked somewhere where the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. All right. So you know what complex coordination is. All right. So what they found was that complex coordination really depended on good relationships. And that good relationships depended on the strength of kindness or compassion. Same strength. Okay? Remember kindness on our list at the beginning in the bottom 80? Want to talk about building strong organizations? Start with strength of kindness. The other thing I want to talk to you about with productive citizens is something that's called the creative class. And this is a term that was coined by economist Richard Florida. And what he talks about is that there's this growing phenomenon called the creative class. It is the fastest growing segment of our economy. 30 million Americans already work in this segment of our economy. And for the foreseeable future, this is where our competitive advantage is going to lie. Yes?
Just what was the name?
Oh, the economist? Richard Florida. And by the way, any books I mention, and also, of course, our favorite author in the room, Ned, any books I mention, I do have a list actually now on my website, my blog, so you can find them there. Okay, so Florida says that creativity depends on independent judgment, willingness to take risk, and it can actually be downright subversive. So stand up if your child is creative, shows independent judgment, takes risks, or can be downright subversive. Come on. I want to see if there's anyone left sitting when we're done with this. This is to see how many honest leaders we have in the room. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. So that's what's really important in this creative class. And let me just show you a little bit more about it. There's something that he calls the creative core. And what that is where new ideas, new technology, new content is developed. So here are the professions that he says go with the creative core. All right, I'm not going to read them to you. You can see them up there. But what a list of professions. What kid in the bottom 80, what kid in the whole class couldn't thrive in one of those professions? Now, I did think that maybe in the bottom 80, you might notice education's a little bit light there. I thought that maybe that was the one profession where the kids in the bottom 80 might not quite fit, given the fact that they're not the top students. And then at the senior commencement of our high school, our superintendent, beloved, had been there for 10 years, did a phenomenal job. After all the rah-rah and hype that started the whole commencement, if you know these things, you know how that goes, he looks at these kids and he says, I know that for some of you, these have not been the happiest years of your life. And I know that because they weren't the happiest years of my life. I was not a good student. So after I heard that, I thought, well, okay, then education even fits. And look at all these wonderful careers. And the other thing is that Florida talks about is that there's creative professionals that support the creative core. And in that, for example, is business. And you're going to hear a lot more about how the bottom 80 fit with business. Now, not everyone was as lucky as Albert Einstein. For some, school never clicked. And John Chambers was one of those. Does anybody know who John Chambers is? Okay, well, he's CEO. Oh, you know. Okay, go ahead. Cisco Systems, yes. And what's Cisco Systems known for? Routers. Huge in the technology field. Huge. Okay. So for Chambers, nothing ever clicked in the school system. But in Cisco Systems, he took the company from $2 billion to almost $40 billion. Yeah, pretty impressive. So you might wonder, well, then what was it? What made the difference for John Chambers? Several years ago, he was speaking to a group. He had one of those employee appreciation days, and everybody brought their families. He was speaking to a group of employees and their families. And one little girl stood up to ask him a question. As she stood there, her mind went blank. Tears came into her eyes. And she stammered, I have a learning disability. Well, Chambers was so moved by that that he went to her and he said, guess what? I have a learning disability too. I'm dyslexic. Look how long he held that in. This guy was wildly successful, but the pain that he was still feeling about that had him keeping that hidden all those years. And that's what can happen to kids. That pain is why some kids can feel they're failing and not say anything. So what made the difference for Chambers? He discovered his gifts. He said his mind is like a three-dimensional chessboard. He can see how things are going to play out 7 steps in advance. Yeah. Okay. What did he do all those years? How did nobody know that he had trouble with reading and writing? He surrounded himself by good readers and writers. He gave them things, said, read this, tell me what you think of it. Okay, I need to get a memo out to so-and-so. Write something up for me. Here's what I want to say. Okay? John Chambers, $40 billion business. Okay? That is the result of clicking.